It's sad that, you know, when I walk around in my uniform, the residents can't tell if I'm here to help them or hurt them.
What we believe at About Face Against the War is that nobody is the worst thing that they've ever done. That sometimes people can have a crisis of conscience, and that can lead to you actually speaking out and being in solidarity with your community.
Hey, Chicago, it's Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the latest local news of the day. Now, it's November 11th, and some veterans in Chicago, well, they're marking Veterans Day just a little bit differently this year. Some of them have been protesting in places like the Broadview ICE processing facility. And today, of course, they're back in the streets again. Many are marching and rallying against what they describe as growing fascism. Now, we're going to hear from a local Army and Navy veteran about why they're taking this stand. But first, In the Loop producer Linnea Dominic is here with me. She produced this episode. Linnea, thank you so much for stopping by.
My pleasure. It's good to be here, Sasha. And I'm happy to talk with you about this because you are actually married to a veteran, and I'm wondering how it feels for you on Veterans Day.
Gosh, such a good question. Yeah. My husband is a Navy vet. Mm-hmm. He was in the Navy for 9 years, just shy of a decade. And, you know, it feels a little different this year. This is our first time going through a Veterans Day being a married couple. So I've always been, you know, the supportive girlfriend, making sure that not just on this day, but also beyond, that I tell him thank you for your service. And I think about my own journey to the United States over the last several years. As you know, Linnea, we've worked very closely together over the past handful of years. And you know that I've gone through my own immigration journey in this country. And just thinking about what he did, you know, taking a stand at 19 years old to say, like, I want to fight for this country. I don't know. It just, as a permanent resident here, it just touched me in a different way. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. So this morning, our conversation, it went a little differently. And I hugged him, for, you know, just a little tighter. And I thought of all the other folks here in the Chicago area, some that I've been talking to over the last several weeks as we've heard the threats of National Guard troops coming here. And we've seen all of this ICE activity, some of it getting pretty violent. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, what does this day feel like for you folks?
Exactly. And that's the crux of today's conversation.
So let's get to it. Linnea, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
At the table, we had Brad Bolu, who served in the Navy between 2015 and 2019. He's protested outside of Broadview. And Artie Walker Petticola is a U.S. Army veteran, a board member with About Face, and a member of Military Law Task Force. Tell me, what's top of mind for you this Veterans Day, Artie?
What's top of mind for us at About Face is that we are holding a rally today at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Mm-hmm. This is something that our ancestors at Vietnam Veterans Against the War have done for 50 years in Chicago, even before there was a Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Chicago. And today is really special because we are coming together with our union partners, with May Day Strong Coalition, and we are speaking out against this administration. We are saying no to the cuts of the federal administration. Mm-hmm. We are saying no to ICE occupation in our streets and no to rising fascism.
Yeah. Tell me more about the connection you see between these issues. Like, you're watching what is playing out. We're all seeing it. But what is it? How does it strike a chord for you?
Yeah, these issues, I mean, for veterans, especially those of us who have served and are now on, you know, taking a stand against militarism, we see these issues as deeply connected. The money that is spent on these forever wars, we're post 9/11 veterans who just saw these wars and needless wars go on forever. That money can be spent in our communities. Right now, we have people literally starving because of the cuts to SNAP benefits. And we are instead spending, this administration is instead spending millions and millions of dollars of occupying our cities with National Guard and ICE. That money can be given directly to the people who desperately need it. And so these issues between militarism and what's happening in our local community are deeply connected.
Yeah. You're nodding, Brad. And you also told a producer that this Veterans Day, it feels emptier this year. Explain.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when I think about myself as a veteran, you know, I think about like the oath that I took to the Constitution. I thought that that was the most important thing in my mind. You know, it wasn't like the uniform or getting a weapon or anything like that. And I think this Veterans Day, I've realized that for a lot of the people who have taken the same oath, I feel that they took it with empty intentions. I don't think they plan to honor their oath.
Mm. You took this a step further. You went to protest outside of Broadview.
I did,
in
yes.
September. Tell me more about the motivation.
Yeah, I was new to protesting, and I had witnessed some of the stuff happening at Broadview on social media. You know, I don't know if I believed all of it. I thought that my social media might have been a little skewed. So you know, I went out there to investigate for myself.
What did things look like to you?
I didn't like what I saw. When I got there, I saw ICE agents openly taunting protesters, and encouraging them to come closer so they could be fired upon. It was a flagrant violation of the First Amendment.
You were also hit in the leg with a tear gas canister, and you sent us a photo, Brad. That was a massive bruise, and I'm hearing that was a week after the incident.
Yeah. There's still a little bit of bruising there, and it's
like literally half of your thigh was covered.
Yes.
What did it feel like?
Some of the most excruciating pain I've ever felt.
Wow.
Yeah, it was right as another veteran protester was being arrested. I turned to look, and just like a sharp pain got me right in the knee. And I gasped, and as I gasped, my lungs filled with the tear gas, and I couldn't breathe, I couldn't move. I ended up getting behind a car for some cover, but it felt like war. It was at least my interpretation of war.
You wore your uniform and you talked with the ICE agents, trying to remind them of what you just mentioned, right? That oath.
Yeah.
That you all took. I mean, how did they respond to you? Were they receptive?
No. More taunts. It's not. I don't think it's something they respect. I don't even know if it's something that they've read. It seems like if they have, then they know what they're doing, and they're not afraid to violate people's rights.
Artie, what's going through your mind hearing Brad describe that interaction?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that Brad and other veterans who have been on the front lines are doing the absolute right thing. Veterans like Brad and myself, we have seen the true cost of war. We have seen the true cost of military violence, both here at home and abroad. And we don't ever want that to come back to our communities. But that's exactly what's happening under this administration. And so About Face, Veterans Against the War, along with Veterans for Peace and other groups within the GI Resistance Network have been speaking out against this for decades, but especially now. And mm-hmm. It's really heartbreaking because, you know, as a mother and somebody who's had to talk to her kids about, you know, this is what you do if you see ICE, you know, when you're out on the streets, it is really heartbreaking and terrifying that this is where we are.
Yeah. Right. How are your kids reacting to you having to even sit them down with this kind of conversation?
You know, I tell them that many people in our society do not have the privilege to be safe from the state violence. And Black parents have to talk to their kids about what to do if they encounter police. Mm-hmm. And in the same light, we are having to talk to our kids because we are an immigrant family about what to do if you encounter ICE. State violence has been present in our communities long before ICE and the military showed up. And this is just an extension in the long history of that state violence. Mm-hmm.
And you were outspoken back in September as well. This was about getting ICE out of the VA hospital, right? Mm-hmm. There was a news conference held. What were the federal agents doing?
So as far as I know, ICE is still using the Hines VA parking lot as a staging ground. And we were hearing from VA members who were going to that hospital for healthcare that they were scared to go to the hospital and get healthcare. And this is an institution of care. It's an institution where you should feel safe.
They're trying to avoid any kind of negative interaction, it sounds like.
Yes, and our veteran members were not feeling safe. And this is after, you know, the VA has already faced tremendous cuts. It's already hard enough to get health care at the VA. And now having ICE there makes it harder. And so our protests eventually led to Senator Tammy Duckworth sending a letter to the VA secretary. But as far as we know, nothing has actually happened to remove ICE from the VA parking lot.
Brad, Artie earlier mentioned that march that's happening today, it's happening at 11, it's called Vets Say No, no ICE, no cuts, no occupation. You are planning to be there.
I will for sure.
What are you hoping for?
I'm hoping for a big turnout. I think Chicago as a city has historically talked about how much they love their veterans. So I would love for some people to put their money where their mouth is and see them out there with us.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because as a veteran, does it feel that way to you? Like Chicago loves and supports its veterans?
It used to. I think with these pending National Guard deployments, I think that the people of Chicago really feel like they're under attack from their own government. And it's sad that, you know, when I walk around in my uniform, the residents can't tell if I'm here to help them or hurt them. So
we're a little scarred by the sight of folks in fatigues mm-hmm. right now. Yep. That's kind of wild, isn't it?
It is. It is. But, you know, then I think about the fact that for populations abroad who we've occupied those areas, they also go through that same trauma. And that is why I think the veteran voice, and especially an anti-war veteran voice, is so critical, because we know that cost of war and we know the trauma it inflicts not only on the people that we are fighting, but also on ourselves.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, this march, the message this year is a little bit different. It's tailored to what we're seeing happen in our region right now. But this event, Artie, has been happening for many years.
It has been
happening. Give us the history.
Yeah, it's been happening for 50 years at least. When Vietnam veterans returned home, Vietnam Veterans Against the War had a large Chicago chapter, because many people don't know this, but the Midwest is really the birthplace of anti-war organizing in Madison, Wisconsin, and here. Mm. And we had a really large chapter of Vietnam veterans that wanted to host a rally that was about ending the war in Vietnam and also about fighting for civil rights here at home, because those were two fights that were happening at
right.
the same time. And they started holding a rally even before there was a Vietnam memorial. And then there was a memorial. And then Richard Daley, I don't know, senior, junior, which one, because there's so many of them.
One of the Daleys.
Yes, one of the Daleys actually tore down the memorial and then reinstalled it at Wacker Drive by the Riverwalk, where people don't even know it's there. And so ever since it's been at that location, we've held it at that location, the memorial at the location. And it's really a space for veterans to come together and speak out against the continued wars, the continued growth of the military-industrial complex, and the continued extraction from our communities.
Right. And we've got another, I guess, main Veterans Day march happening at Soldier Field, too.
That
right?
happens all, I think that happens every year. I've gone to that. It's more for the politicians to say, we thank you for your service. It's nice. I've been to it, but it has nothing to do with what do we actually mean when we say we support our veterans, mm-hmm. especially those who are speaking out against what's happening in our country.
Well, you know, as we wrap, I'd love to hear from both of you. Tell us, you know, as you've got the ears of so many folks right now, how can members of the public be more supportive? How can we support your mission on Veterans Day and beyond? You first, Artie.
Yeah, I think don't discredit the voices of veterans who are speaking out against war and militarism and imperialism. Far too often, our voices are labeled as radical or leftist, or we don't represent veterans, when we indeed have put on the uniform, we have served. So don't discredit and discount our voices. And then second, when veterans are speaking out, also don't say, well, we don't want your voice. You served in, the military, you actually don't have the credibility to say I should be off our streets, because sometimes we get that. It's like, you supported this government. Mm. Why are you now speaking out against that? And what we believe at About Face Against the War is that nobody is the worst thing that they've ever done, that sometimes people can have a crisis of conscience, and that can lead to you actually speaking out and being in solidarity with your community.
Does that resonate with you too, Brad?
It does. It definitely does. I would encourage, any service member or anyone in a position of power, or related to someone in a position of power, to read the Constitution that you swore an oath to, as well as, really think about your orders, because they're not just orders, and you're not just following orders. You're executing them. You're the militant arm of our government. And it's a responsibility that can't be taken lightly.
Brad Bolu served in the Navy between 2015 and 2019. He's also been protesting at Broadview. And Artie Walker Petticoatla is a U.S. Army veteran, a board member with About Face, and a member of the Military Law Task Force. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now let's get right to what Chicago is talking about. At the table to break down the biggest stories of the day, we had WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and Chicago Sun-Times arts and culture reporter Ambar Colon. So let's start with the government shutdown, Claire, because we're at day 42, I believe. But a deal is in sight. This is after 8 Democratic senators sided with Republicans. Now, Illinois Congressman Mike Quigley was on Morning Edition today, and he said the House could vote tomorrow afternoon. So give us the latest and tell us more about how this is all playing out locally, because there is a little bit of drama.
Right. So lawmakers like Quigley sort of headed back to D.C. for this potential vote. House could return as early as tomorrow around 4 o'clock, Quigley said, to vote to reopen the federal government. Many Democrats say they won't support the deal, as we know, and even some Republicans saying they may not be inclined to vote for it either. So this current deal does not include tax breaks for Obamacare, but it does fully fund SNAP. So this was made possible by that group of moderates in a 60-40 vote, saying they're committed to holding a vote later on, possibly another vote in December, regarding extending those Affordable Care Act tax credits that do expire January 1st due to the shutdown.
Yeah. Many Illinois Dems, Quigley included, they're upset with our state's senior U.S. Senator Dick Durbin because he's playing ball with Republicans. So here's a couple of WBEZ listeners. They identify themselves as Democrats, and this is how they summed this up on Say More yesterday.
I'm very disappointed by Senator Durbin, whom I voted for several times.
People in Illinois want to keep this shutdown going. You know, the polls say so.
I understand the immediate impact to federal employees. I get it. But then what was it all for?
And you know these guys, these Republicans in the Senate and in the House, they're not going to vote through these subsidies.
This whole thing, which is affecting my grandchildren and affecting my children, is just simply horrendous.
So that group, including Durbin Democrats, they voted to hold a later vote on extending the Affordable Care Act tax credits. We know that they expire on the 1st of January. And the assurance, though, of a December vote on these subsidies, none of that is enough for Senator Tammy Duckworth. They're on opposite ends of this debate, aren't they?
Right. So we should say, too, that Durbin says that, you know, he's in opposition to the Trump administration. He wants to remind people of that. But he also says that we cannot keep our government closed indefinitely. This is a quote, to protect the policies. So Durbin's vote, as you mentioned, Sasha, was criticized by his Illinois counterpart, Senator Tammy Duckworth, who says she does not trust a vague promise from Trump and other Republicans to address the expiring tax credits. Mm-hmm. Durbin's vote was also criticized by other key progressive senators, Bernie Sanders being one of them, also Elizabeth Warren. And you mentioned Mike Quigley this morning.
Yes.
What he said to Morning Edition is that Americans will get fed, but they won't have health care in response to the House measure.
Right. So, Ambar, as Claire outlined, this vote, this does fund SNAP benefits through September of next year. And in the meantime, there's still a lot of confusion, especially here on the ground, over SNAP altogether. Many recipients, as we know, they've only gotten partial checks during this ongoing shutdown. So just remind us how big of a deal this is for people who are relying on this to put food on the table and pay for groceries.
Yeah. So SNAP is a huge help for families. Most of the recipients, as we know, are women and children.
Right.
Having SNAP benefits frees up money for these families, for rents, for utilities, for all the other things that they'd like to be able to pay for. And it's also great for the economy, you know, for
right.
people to go out to the stores and be buying groceries. It benefits all of us, and it keeps prices down. As we know, grocery prices have been skyrocketing.
Yes.
Over the past year. So
absolutely. Now, many restaurants in the Chicago area are stepping up to help. Big picture, what are they trying to do right now, Ambar?
Yeah, so there are so many incredible restaurants all over the city that are really stepping up to the plate, and they're either doing like free meal hours, or they're doing a come in, no questions asked, show your SNAP card, and we can give you a free meal.
Mm-hmm.
Some places are doing you know, meals for the entire family. Some places have like fridges that they've been stocking, that the community has been stocking as well.
Wow.
So it's a lot of people stepping up and making sure that neighbors are fed.
Yeah. So in a few minutes, we're going to have you shout out a few of these restaurants. I'll join in with you as well. Get some specific names out there. Tell folks how they're helping. But before we do that, Ambar, I want to get to some fun news that you recently reported on, because Chicago is going to be the center of attention for New Year's Eve. What's going on?
Correct. So Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve is coming to Chicago for the first time in the show's 55-year history. They've never had a central time countdown.
Wow.
So we will have our very own edition. ABC and Dick Clark Productions announced yesterday that this would be happening. And we don't know who will be the host or who the performers will be yet, mm-hmm. but I'm hoping that that announcement will be coming soon.
Right. Any idea why? Is it just, you know, we haven't been able to take part in this for a long time? Let's bring something fresh
to
Chicago?
I think that the Dick Clark Productions company, that they just want to bring this to other places. So they're also doing the very first Spanish language broadcast. It's going to be out of Puerto Rico, so people on Atlantic time will be able to tune into that as well.
Right. I love that Chicago is getting to take part in that. Will you be watching, ladies, New Year's Eve night? What are your plans?
I'll say that any event that's bringing people into Chicago, putting them in hotel rooms, eating at our restaurants is great. But will I personally be watching? No, I will not.
Ambar?
For me, it really depends on who the host is, who the performers are. I hope they keep it Chicago-centric.
Yes.
I would love someone like Jennifer Hudson, for example, to host.
That's a good one.
She would do a great job.
That's a good one.
It highly depends on whether or not they can attract me based
Chicago-ize
on
it.
Yes.
Chicago-ize it. I'll be looking out for that announcement, that's for sure. On immigration enforcement, Claire, the Trump administration's asking the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to block a ruling of a lower court here in Chicago. This is over agents' use of force.
This has been being played out for weeks now. So the order by Judge Sarah Ellis, as we know, limits the use of some of that excessive force, especially use of tear gas, use of pepper balls against protesters or observers or media members who pose no immediate threat and without two warnings. That's the stipulation of this order as well. It also includes a restriction on chokeholds, which we are at the point where we're having to do in federal court. Also, aggressive restraints all part of this deportation campaign, calling the injunction, though, overboard, and Trump's administration calling it unworkable. Mm. The Justice Department says that Ellis's order threatens the safety of federal officers here, and it violates the separation of powers. So more back and forth. It's unclear when the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals will respond at this point, but we will keep you posted, as we always do.
Yes. Well, speaking of immigration, I want to turn for a moment to Chicago Sun-Times reporter Mohammed Samra. Now, he's been reporting in Little Village in recent days. He's out there right now. Little Village, as you know, folks, it's been the site of several recent immigration raids, which prompted a very strong response from the local community there. Hey, Mohammed, are you with us?
Hey, Sasha. Yeah, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you so much for joining. Tell us what exactly is happening around you right now. What's the scene like?
Yeah, so I'm out at the Little Village Arch on 26th and Troy, and around 8:40 this morning, about 15 protesters had blocked off West 26th Street between Troy Street and Ebony Avenue for a prayer vigil that they were holding for those detained by federal agents during Operation Midway Blitz. A handful of officers responded. There was one encounter between a sergeant and one of the lead organizers where they had asked if they had received permission to block off the street. Mm-hmm. And the organizer had responded that she was not given a no. So that's the current scene of West 26th blocked off as they hold this prayer event.
Yeah. Did you hear anything more from protesters about their message today, or did you talk with any one-on-one?
I didn't have a chance to speak with any one-on-one, but the common consensus is they're here to protest peacefully, and they say they're here armed with peace and prayer. They want to specifically pass along the message that they're not here with violent intent. They're here to pray for those detained.
Mm-hmm. Now, Border Patrol Chief Greg Bovino said federal agents would be in Little Village again today to make arrests. Any details on that? Because I know we heard this, I think, since yesterday, but what's the latest?
So we haven't seen any leads on activity, federal agent activity in Little Village so far this morning. That's something that we are closely monitoring as the day progresses. One of the things that Commander at Large Greg Bovino had posted on it yesterday was that himself and federal agents would be in Little Village this morning, and had extended an invite to Governor J.B. Pritzker to join him. And Pritzker is expected to speak at a Veterans Day ceremony in Little Village later this morning.
Okay. Well, you've been covering the story of alleged shots that were fired at federal immigration agents on Saturday. At first, details were pretty few and far between, Mohammed, but what is the very latest on that?
So the latest we have is that the Department of Homeland Security has reported that there's somebody in custody and related to that. They haven't released the identity of the suspect yet. And we had confirmed through police reports that there were two 9mm shell casings that were recovered from the 2500 block of South Kedby Avenue where the shots were reportedly fired. Mm-hmm. There were also several arrests unrelated to that specific incident that occurred on 23rd and Sawyer long after federal agents had left the area.
Now, as you said, religious leaders are gathering now. They're expected to speak any moment. Governor Pritzker is planning, it sounds like, a visit to the neighborhood. You know what else he'll be up to once he gets there?
That we are not entirely sure, but that's something that we'll have eyes on as the day develops.
Well, that's Mohammed Samra, who's a Chicago Sun-Times reporter. He's joining us live from Little Village, where Border Patrol Commander at Large Greg Bovino has said that we could see immigration arrests today. Now, we should also mention that sources tell the Chicago Tribune that Bovino and the federal agents involved in Operation Midway Blitz, that they will soon leave Chicago. The Department of Homeland Security, of course, hasn't made an official statement on that just yet. But stay with us here on WBEZ and the Sun-Times. We'll have the latest on that developing story. Umbar, the Auditorium Theater, the 135-year-old landmark that's at 50 East Ida B. Wells, it's getting a makeover? What's happening?
Yes. So this is part of several renovations that are happening at the auditorium. I think this one is probably the most interesting, though. So the big atrium, it's right above the main balcony. Mm-hmm. If you just look up, There's peeling paint and some glass that might be a little bit cracked and faded. So that is getting some love, finally.
It's getting a facelift, yes.
Correct. So there's 108 different stained glass panels. They were designed by George Healy and Louis Millet. They were famed stained glass artists back in the late 1800s when the Auditorium Theater was built in 1889. They brought that glass to the World's Fair in Paris because of how impressive it was.
Wow.
So it really put Chicago on the map for its architectural innovation. The guys who designed it, Dankmar Adler and Louis Sullivan, they were extremely famous in their own right at the time as well. Their protege, you may have heard of him, Frank Lloyd Wright.
May have heard of him once or twice.
Yes, he also worked on this theater. So there's just so much
history
and within the walls.
I hope they'll be able to keep some of that vintage look too, right?
Yeah, so they're actually restoring it to how Louis Sullivan and Adler wanted it.
Oh, wonderful. Remind us of some of the big recent shows that we've seen at the Auditorium. I know I went last spring, I saw Batman.
Oh, wow.
We had the original Batman in concert. It was fantastic.
That's very cool.
With the orchestra playing right there in front of us.
Yeah, well, when I was there, Boz Skaggs, his band was doing a sound check, and he performed that night. So there's a recent performance.
Nice.
I know David Byrne of Talking Heads had several shows there. That was a big topic over here. Kamala Harris, former Vice President Kamala Harris, was also recently at the Auditorium Theater. She stopped in Chicago for her book.
Her
tour.
Book. Yes, that's true. So any idea of the timeline? When do you think we will get to step into this new looking Auditorium Theater?
Yeah, so the renovations are ongoing. They won't close the Auditorium Theater, but the atrium will be finished in fall of 2027. So if you're at any shows between now and then, if you just look up, you can see the progress that they're making.
Nice. Well, what else are you watching, Claire?
Well, this is just, you know, something for sports fans in Chicago, but former Blackhawk defenseman Duncan Keith, many of us remember him from helping the Hawks win the Stanley Cup in 2010, 2013, and 2015.
Yeah.
He was finally inducted in the Hockey Hall of Fame last night. He was with the Hawks for 16 seasons, which I feel like people kind of forget. And he's now 42 years old. He was named one of the 100 greatest NHL players of all time. This was back in 2017. He was emotional last night, but, you know, thanking family, thanking friends, but thanking Chicago fans, which
Absolutely.
You got to do in Chicago.
Yes. Sounds wonderful. Now, Ambar, before we wrap up, I want to do what I promised earlier. Let's shout out those restaurants that are helping folks whose SNAP benefits have been impacted. You've got this great list. It's up right now online at suntimes.com. Tell us more.
Yeah. I also want to mention that I'm updating this list pretty frequently, several times a week. Literally, as I'm sitting here, I'm getting emails with more tips of like restaurants that are doing things like this.
Oh, great.
One of them in particular, Edgebrook Coffee Shop on the north side, neighbors can go in, show their SNAP cards and get a free bacon and pancake breakfast. Kale My Name. I know we've talked about them a lot, but they're in Albany Park, a vegan restaurant.
Yes.
And they're doing free meals every day, 3 to 5 p.m. And I feel like 3 to 5 p.m. is kind of a hot spot for a lot of these restaurants. October Cafe in Norwood Park, they're also doing free meals every single day between those same hours.
Cantina 52 in Crystal Lake. I want to shout out some more suburban restaurants, too. While I have you here, JJ Fish and Chicken in Maywood, also offering free food to those who lost their SNAP benefits. And Schoolhouse Kitchen and Studio in Oak Park, as well as Media Noche Cafe in Berwyn. That's WBEZ's Claire Lane, Sun-Times Arts and Culture reporter Ambar Colon. We also heard from Sun-Times reporter Mohamed Samra, who was live from Little Village.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.
Rise and Shy, WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.